I think there's enough moderates in the legislature to say, look, let's just go ahead and take it. Let's don't fight over this. Let's find something else to fight over.
With a new governor about to take office, a look at the future of Medicaid expansion in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, November 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Anchorage School Superintendent talks about the district's unexpected surplus.
We do have budget challenges based on the projected revenue. That's not going away.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. And by Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska. Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
After losing an election that was the most expensive and some say annoying in state history, outgoing Senator Mark Begich has proposed a bill that would curtail political calls to voters' homes. Begich proposes to expand the Do Not Call registry to super PACs and political nonprofits. Americans have registered more than 217 million phones on the Do Not Call list, but that only keeps commercial telemarketers at bay. The Begich bill would require political groups that can raise and spend unlimited amounts of cash to abide by the same rules that apply to telemarketers. It would also prohibit robocalls to any phone on the registry and ban telephone push polling in general. It does not cover candidates or political parities. More than $57 million was spent on Alaska's 2014 Senate race, most of it by outside groups of the sort Begich is targeting in the bill. Although Begich lost to Republican Dan Sullivan, the outside money favored Mark Begich. Some $22 million was spent on behalf of Begich, compared to about $18 million to help Sullivan. Bethel's Anna Hoffman and former Senate President Rick Helford are chairing Governor-elect Bill Walker's transition team. Walker is racing toward inauguration on December 1st. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more on the activity leading up to the new administration.
Hoffman and Helford are pulling together stakeholders in 17 topic areas, ranging from budgets and subsistence to the National Guard and education. Those people will attend this weekend's transition conference to prepare briefings for Walker and Milot. Hoffman says they're seeking a demographic that's representative of Alaska.
We're trying to reach out to a variety of age groups, males, females, Democrats and Republicans, and people that work in urban Alaska and rural Alaska, so that we can have all of those perspectives shared and can contribute to the end product.
Over the weekend, about 200 people will gather at the University of Alaska Anchorage campus with the incoming governor and Lieutenant Governor Byron Milot to dig deep into the state's most pressing issues.
We'll get together and identify the most significant areas of concern, areas where we can reach consensus and steps forward for implementation. And then also the groups will spend time identifying areas under those specific topics where the stakeholders couldn't reach consensus, but tried to identify items that can be overcome.
Hoffman says the group will work more with policy issues and less with any personnel decisions for the incoming administration. Walker must submit a budget to the legislature in less than a month. While he's been campaigning around the state, the price of oil has dropped well below forecasts, leading to deficit spending for the legislature and lean budgets in the near future. Hoffman says the state's fiscal reality will play into every discussion this weekend.
I'm sure that all of the different areas of infrastructure and natural resources and public safety, revitalizing the National Guard, all of those areas, you know, I'm sure everybody would agree that they need more services. But before those discussions happen, participants will all need to understand what kind of budget constraints we are facing in the state. And with that in mind, what are the things that we can continue to strive toward?
Walker is slated to be sworn in December 1st. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
On the campaign trail, Bill Walker made expanding the state's Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act one of his top priorities, and he's confident he could make that decision without input from the state legislature.
It's up to the governor to accept that.
But when Walker takes office next month, will it really be so easy to expand a program that has been a tough sell in other conservative states? APRN's Annie Feit spent the last week trying to find out.
Medicaid expansion would allow around 40,000 low-income Alaskans, mostly childless adults, to receive health benefits. The federal government will pay 100% of the program until the end of 2016. After that, the state's share will slowly increase to 10% by 2020. Walker has said the decision is a no-brainer, at least while the federal government is providing full funding.
I always will default back to what's best for Alaskans, and it's best for Alaskans to have, as many Alaskans, to have the health care coverage we've already paid for.
Medicaid expansion has the support of a long list of organizations in Alaska, including the Alaska Chamber of Commerce, the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. But does Governor-elect Walker need support from state lawmakers, too? So far, 28 states have implemented Medicaid expansion. Laura Snyder with the Kaiser Family Foundation has been tracking those decisions across the country. She says most states that have approved the program have had legislative support.
There have been a few states where the governor has acted on his own through executive authority, but most states have generally incorporated it into state budgets, which usually require legislative sign-off or have sought specifically statutory authority through their legislature to implement the expansion.
According to the State Department of Health and Social Services, Governor-elect Walker can make the initial decision on his own, but he'll need the legislature to provide funding. Even though the federal government covers 100% of Medicaid expansion through 2016, the state has to pay some administrative costs. That will add up to between $3 and $10 million per year, according to two separate reports that analyze the potential impact of Medicaid expansion in Alaska. And those millions could be a tough sell for the Republican-controlled legislature.
I'll need to know the number of lives that benefit and what those benefits include, and then the future costs to the state of Alaska.
Anna Fairclough is a Republican senator from Eagle River. She also co-chairs the Senate Finance Committee. Fairclough says Governor-elect Walker will have to make a strong case to convince lawmakers to approve any new spending as they work to trim the state budget. But she plans to keep an open mind about Walker's push for Medicaid expansion.
It'll be a lively debate, but I look forward to work with him to the best of my abilities within the financial constraints that this state is currently facing.
One of the legislature's biggest advocates for Medicaid expansion thinks lawmakers will ultimately see the benefits of the program. Senator Hollis French, a Democrat from Anchorage, vacated his seat this year to run for lieutenant governor and won't be returning to Juneau. French expects some grumbling in the legislature over the issue, but thinks ultimately lawmakers will see it as a win for the state.
I think you've had a governor pushing down his commissioners to make the strongest case possible against this expansion. Once that changes, once you have strong numbers coming from credible new commissioners from a new administration, it's just going to look very different.
French says Medicaid expansion offers a big jolt to the state economy that will be hard for lawmakers to pass up. A state report estimates the program will bring in more than $2 billion to Alaska's economy by 2020, while costing the state less than $250,000. French thinks lawmakers will look at those benefits and decide to focus on other priorities.
President Obama is not up for election ever again. This is a program that's going to help thousands of Alaskans. I think there's enough moderates in the legislature to say, look, let's just go ahead and take it. Let's don't fight over this. Let's find something else to fight over.
If Walker is successful in improving Medicaid expansion for Alaska, the program will take a while to implement. The state's current Medicaid program will have to ramp up to accept thousands of new applications. One federal official says it's difficult to predict how long that will take, but estimates Medicaid expansion could be up and running in Alaska in under 6 months. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, President Obama gives a shout out to the Sitka School District at the White House.
And then you got Mary Wagner, superintendent of the Sitka, Alaska School District. Where's Mary? She came a long way. There she is.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
The Anchorage School District spent less money than they planned during the first quarter of this year. If that trend continues, they'll have an extra $22 million left over by the end of June 2015. Superintendent Ed Graff attributes the savings to prudent business practices and the district's difficulty in hiring and retaining highly experienced teachers and staff. ASD is spending less than planned on salaries and benefits. According to state law and board policies, the district can only keep 10% of their budget in a fund balance that's held in case of emergencies. That means they have 18 months to spend around $24 million. Graff says he thinks they need to set most of it aside for next school year's projected fund deficit.
We do have budget challenges based on the projected revenue. That's not going away.
Graff says the district also needs to address ways to solve the hiring problems. The district was unable to fill 23 teaching positions this year, and those classes are being taught by long-term substitutes.
You know, people are deciding that, you know, they don't want to take a risk and seek employment, or they understand the challenges that we're facing and the uncertainty. You know, that's difficult.
The district also has dozens of posted support staff openings. School board member Natasha von Imhoff says the extra money could help complete studies and implement practices to make the district run more efficiently in the future, but they're keeping the vacancies in mind.
We're going to be very conservative, I think, with the spending of the fund, with the money. We will continue to make every effort to fill the needed positions, and that money will be set aside for sure.
The district also might spend the money on summer school or increasing pay for substitute teachers. The administration will make recommendations, and the school board will discuss the issue during their December 1st meeting. Formalizing a government-to-government relationship between tribes and the state was the message and the mission today of former members of a commission tasked with addressing tribal self-governance. As APRN's Josh Edge reports, their report says rural governance remains unfinished business in Alaska.
The Alaska Commission on Rural Governance and Empowerment first reported on the need for tribal recognition 15 years ago. Veronica Slager, the president of the North Star Group and member of the original commission, says today's report outlines the need for the state to recognize a native way of life priority, allow for tribal jurisdiction, and develop natural resources for the benefit of local people. Slager says these priorities all allude to one thing.
The number one recommendation is that the state, at some level, whether it's a legislative initiative or administrative initiative or both, needs to once and for all recognize tribes.
Though little progress has been made at a state level on the issue, Slager says the state's social and political climates have changed over the last 15 years.
Everybody sees that there's an issue, and also there's fewer people who are fearing this issue. There's more people who recognize tribes, work with them, and are in fact seeing the constructive role and see how everybody needs to work together.
Despite those changes, Slager says the state's inconsistent message when it comes to working with tribes has made progress slow.
Until we get that consistent message, whether it be from the administrative arm, the legislative arm, or the judicial arm, being a, you know, comprehensive recognition of tribes and working with tribes universally, we have a lot of work to do.
With a new state administration, Slager is hopeful progress can be made. Incoming Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott also served on both commissions and is a Tlingit from Yakutat. He says he will work with Governor-elect Bill Walker to strengthen the state's relationships with tribal entities.
We will try to make progress at the level of the policies and programs and the administration of state government to the maximum extent possible.
The commission is no longer active, but former commission members and others met last December to streamline the report, which they presented to the public today. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
You can go to alaskapublic.org to see a copy of the full report. North Pole's mayor says the city council is considering hiking sales taxes to cover an estimated $180,000 drop in property tax revenues caused by the shutdown of the Flint Hills Resources Refinery. KUAC's Tim Ellis talked with the mayor at the Alaska Municipal League's annual local government conference in Anchorage and has this report.
North Pole Mayor Bryce Ward says the city council will consider hiking sales taxes in Monday's meeting. They'll also look at raising alcohol and cigarette taxes and cutting city staff and other expenses, all in an effort to avoid cutbacks in services.
The reality is, if folks want the same level of service that they've had in the past, it's going to cost a little bit more to do that.
Ward says city officials hope the proposals will enable North Pole to absorb the 3.5% cut in city revenues they estimate will occur when the Fairbanks North Star Borough completes its assessment of the refinery. Flint Hills closed the facility last summer and converted it to a fuel terminal. The company is now asking the borough to lower its property tax bill. Ward says city officials expect that to happen. How much, they're not sure.
We're trying to plan our budget. We have to have our budget approved by the end of the year. We won't actually get a full determination until sometime in January or February. So we're looking at worst case scenario.
The refinery is the city's biggest property taxpayer, accounting for about 40% of that source of revenue. The mayor says he and council members believe the burden of filling that revenue gap shouldn't fall on the backs of local property taxpayers. Ward says, in fact, they should get a break.
I have a couple plans to actually look at potentially lowering our mill rate, but increasing our sales tax, and we'll see how that all works out.
Ward talked about the issue Wednesday during the Alaska Municipal League's annual local government conference in Anchorage. The organization helps municipal officials deal with problems in their community and represents their concerns at the state and federal level. Most of the talk in the opening day of the conference was about another kind of revenue shortfall, the kind caused by cutbacks in state revenue sharing. That's money given to communities as their share of state revenues, mainly from the oil industry. Fairbanks Mayor John Eberhardt says the city got about $1.6 million this fiscal year, a cut of about $100,000 of the share it was due.
$1.6 million is roughly 5% of the city budget, give or take, so it's important.
Municipal League officials told the more than 100 local government officials from around the state that every community took a hit last year because the state cut back the $60 million that it's given in revenue sharing to municipalities since 2008. Eberhardt says that's unfair because revenue sharing is a relatively small part of Alaska's multi-billion dollar budget that helps all municipalities, especially smaller communities.
The fact is, you know, the state still gets billions of dollars a year. And so whether it's $52 million, which is where it was cut to last year, or whether it's $60 million a year, that's still a lot less than in past years, and it's a drop in the bucket compared to total state revenues.
That may be a hard sell given the prospect of an even tighter state budget in the coming fiscal year due to competing fiscal pressures and falling state oil revenues. Municipal League members will consider a resolution today urging the state to restore funding the revenue sharing program to $60 million and another to urge the state to honor its agreement to maintain its present level of funding for the state public employees and teachers' retirement systems. In Anchorage, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
The municipality of Anchorage is developing a new community plan on ending homelessness in Anchorage. During a listening session held last evening, about 20 people gathered to discuss possible solutions to the decades-old problem. KSKA's Ann Hillman has the story.
Daryl Hess was the former and only homelessness coordinator for the municipality of Anchorage from 2009 to 2012. He says during that time, he read through 40 years of studies and plans about homelessness in the city, and the end results were typically the same. They suggested that agencies try to solve it with little cost to the local government. Hess, speaking just as a citizen, says that needs to change.
I'm hoping with the next plan that there is a robust commitment from local government. Without that commitment, the plan will once again not be nearly as successful as it could be.
Hess suggests that the municipality could do things like speed up the permitting process or adjust some zoning rules to enable affordable housing developments. Brian Shelton Kelly from Anchorage Neighborhood Works agrees with these suggestions. He says developers need incentives to build property for low-income households. But he says the problem is twofold. It costs at least $500 just to maintain, insure, and keep the lights on for a rental unit. That's too much for people on very small fixed incomes to pay. And even if properties could be subsidized and built, community members have to be open to projects in their areas.
While, you know, there's that kind of general overall support for affordable housing, when we go to communities or neighborhoods to suggest a project or to suggest that a project will be located on a particular site, no one wants it in their backyard.
Ron Oliva owns property by the Brother Francis Shelter and Beans Cafe. He says those services and others hurt businesses, enable substance abuse, and cause more harm than good.
It's a disaster economically. It's a disaster health-wise. You wouldn't know the things that I've put up with in the form of unsanitary conditions.
Carmen Springer is the executive director of the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness, and she chaired the listening session. She says the new five-year community plan will incorporate the input of everyone who's impacted by homelessness. And for her, that's everyone in Anchorage.
We all interact with the homeless community every day, whether it's because we know someone who may be part of that community or whether we're trying to decide how it fits within the larger framework of the Anchorage community.
Springer says the plan aims to solve the problem even when agencies are receiving less and less funding.
So if we can come together as a community and look at the services that are needed and how we can provide them in a more strategic way so that it's more economically feasible and it's reaching all the people with appropriate services at the appropriate time, then it's going to be better for everybody.
Some participants suggested consolidating services across agencies to make them more efficient. The plan committee will hold a large summit in the early spring to discuss their ideas and present the data they gather. The new plan will come into effect this summer. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Sitka School District has a big fan, none other than President Barack Obama. Sitka School Superintendent Mary Wagner was in Washington, D.C. yesterday for a White House summit on technology and education. Wagner was the only Alaska superintendent present, and as KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports, Sitka's effort to integrate technology into the classroom got some special attention.
Wagner was one of more than 100 superintendents from across the country who were recognized for their efforts to bring their classrooms into the 21st century. And she got a special shout out from the president.
And then you got Mary Wagner, superintendent of the Sitka, Alaska School District. Where's Mary? She came a long way. There she is. Yeah, give her a hand for coming from Alaska.
The Superintendent Summit is part of the White House's ConnectEd initiative, which aims to bring high-speed internet access to every school in America. Here's how the president explained it.
It's a five-year plan to close the technology gap in our schools and connect 99% of Americans' students to high-speed internet. And this is why it's important. Right now, fewer than 40% of public schools have high-speed internet in their classrooms. Less than half. That's not good since we invented the internet.
President Obama said the Sitka School District has made major strides in recent years.
So 6 years ago, the technology in the schools was so outdated, only a few people could even print documents. And logging on the internet could take 20 minutes. Today, with the help of the Recovery Act, the whole district has Wi-Fi. The ratio of computers to students is 4-to-1 and falling. Kids are Skyping in class with experts from all over the world on a whole range of subjects, and Sitka is now in the top tier of districts in the state. It's been transformative.
6 years ago, the students at Sitka High School came to the school board and said, you're not preparing us for a future.
That's Mary Wagner. The Sitka School District received over $1 million in funding under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, also known as the Stimulus Bill, and used it to revamp technology. Everything from switching out dysfunctional email and printing systems to investing in laptops and smart boards for the classroom. Wegner was the assistant superintendent at the time. She says the big question for the district has been
to really come in and say, okay, we have the hardwire, but why does this make a difference for learning?
Well, I call it the big Q. It's the big question.
Chris Briner is a fourth grade teacher at Keet Gushaheen Elementary School. When the president mentioned that Sitka students are Skyping with experts around the world, he was talking about Briner's class. For the big Q, students get to ask any question they want and then figure out ways to find the answer. Briner usually tries to connect them with an expert in that field, whether it's the East Coast ice cream entrepreneur who Skyped in to talk about how to design ice cream flavors, or Martin Keen, the founder of Keen Footwear, who walks students through how to build a one-legged stool.
Each time this happens, I think the students get some information they couldn't get elsewhere, but more importantly, I think they really benefit from the fact that these adults are taking them seriously and treating them like colleagues, and it gives them this sense of, you know, if there's something I want to know, then I have the ability to find out.
And sometimes, he says, it's been downright magical. Take the student who asked if Bigfoot is real. He got a call back from James Fay, also known as Bobo, from the Animal Planet show Finding Bigfoot.
He goes, hey, man, you must be the smartest kid in your classroom because only geniuses know Bigfoot's real. And this is the shy kid in my class. And I wouldn't say that it's like changed his life or anything, but definitely in that moment when he hears those words, his whole face just lights up. And to me, it was one of my favorite moments of just watching that kind of like spark happen.
And as for Mary Wegner, how did it feel to have President Obama say, Mary Wegner? Where's Mary Wegner?
It was pretty exciting. I was standing right in front of the press, so I couldn't really stand up or I was going to block the camera's view of President Obama. But it's not just me being recognized. It's the work that we're doing in Sitka that's being recognized. And that started from students to the school board down to the teachers and continues with the students.
And she says that work will continue. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Bethel, Ann Hillman and Tim Ellis in Anchorage, and Rachel Waldholz in Sitka. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.